Okay, I want to stay in the same vein that we were in last time, as we were talking about Jesus being bullied through and rammed through these trials that he experienced. I want to talk about the fear that he was facing as these things went through. That's what bully is. Bully is a fear. Bully is fear. That's what it is. It bullies us around. Now, we've talked about this before. See, Satan did not want Jesus to be crucified. Now, I know that's contrary to what some of us have heard, but I proved it to you through the scriptures. He did not want. He did everything he could. All the temptations was to stop Jesus from going to the cross. But Satan didn't want that to happen, because if that happened, then his head would be crushed. He would be dethroned. Satan would be dethroned. We would have a new king in town and a new king of the universe. So this is what was going on here. Satan is using now fear to stop Jesus from going to the cross. And it's a bully. Now, the plan of the Jews was to arrest Jesus in the middle of the night. And they did. They arrested him. They bound him. They brought him and they rammed him through these trials. The plan was to have a conviction at daybreak. The Sanhedrin could not meet until daybreak. The court could not meet until daybreak. So they were going to get their conviction at first light. Then they were going to get him to the governor, get Jesus to the governor, to acquire a conviction of death by crucifixion as soon as they possibly could. Now, the reason that they were in such an urgency, they felt, the reason that they were doing this so fast and with such urgency was to do it before the city woke up. They would arrest him when everybody was asleep. They did not know how the crowd was going to react. They didn't know if they were going to incite a rebellion. They did not know. And so they were going to do this under the guise and under the secrecy of night. Get it done before anybody awoke, before there could be any witnesses to come for Jesus in his defense, before he could acquire any defense. They were going to ram this thing through and bully this thing through. And they were on schedule. Now, bullying. Bullying is a term that we hear a lot today. And what bullying is when someone or people or something, it doesn't have to be people, but someone or people or something attempt to dominate us or dominate people, other people, and control other people using fear. That's all bullying is. And we all have faced fear. We've all faced the bully. That's not the question. You cannot go through life and not face the bully of fear. It will hit you. Now, that's not the question. The question is this, is what do you do when you experience the bully of fear? Does it control you? And see, I have seen it control so many people. A 6-7 foot man can curl up in the floor like a fetus because of fear. It stops our lives from progressing. It'd be amazing just to know how much fear has robbed from just these people in this room. How much fear has robbed from you from accomplishing what you desire to accomplish and accomplish what God desires for you to accomplish so he can bless your life. You see, that would be just amazing. See, we cannot go through life and not experience fear. That's not the question. The question is, what do we do with it? Does it control us? Does it dominate us? Or do we control it? Do we do it afraid? Do we do it anyway? Do we wade through the fear? See, Jesus was arrested. Fear arrests you. It arrests your life. Fear binds you, and Jesus was bound. Fear was, they were slapping Jesus around. That's what fear does to us. It beats on us emotionally and spiritually and mentally, and it comes out of our body physically. Fear beats on us. It mocks us. It intimidates us. It insults us. This is what fear does to every single person. And we know that. But can we do what we're called to do with all of this happening and to us and in us? See, courage is not the absence of fear. What courage is doing it through fear. Fear very present, fear very real. Can we continue to do it afraid? And that's what Jesus did. Time after time after time. Are you the Son of God? Are you the Christ? Pilate will even ask him as we look at today, are you the king? Are you a king? He had several opportunities to say, no, I messed up. I shouldn't have said that. No, I'm really not. Fear could have bowed him back down, but he didn't. He went through it. And he finished his call. He finished his purpose in life. And if we take up our cross daily and follow Christ, then we will too. We've got to go through the fear. Now, that's what we're going to be talking about. Now, where we left it off last time was they had rammed and bullied him through three trials, Annas, Caiaphas, and the Sanhedrin. And what happened at the court trial is they asked him, "Are you the Christ?" And Jesus says, "I'm not going to argue with you about that. If I tell you, you won't believe me. And if I try to reason with you, you won't answer me. But I will tell you this. From now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God." Now, they knew what that meant. That meant they were going to be judged by him. They knew what that meant. Then they said, "Are you then the Son of God?" He had all these opportunities to say no. He says, "I'm not going to argue with you about that either. But you would be really wise to say, 'I am.'" And when he said the "I am," see, to the Jews, what that meant was that he's God, the "I am that I am." Go all the way back, the eternal God, all the way back to the book of Exodus, where Moses is talking to this bush, and the bush is talking back. And Moses says, "Who can I tell people sent me?" The bush has told Moses to go to Egypt and tell Pharaoh, "Let my people go. Who can I say sent me? You just tell them that I am, has sent you." And that became the eternal name of God. And when Jesus said, "I am," what he's saying is, he was that bush. What he's saying is, he is equal with God. And they went irate. They ripped their clothes. They beat their chest. They started screaming and yelling. "You've heard it out of his own mouth, with your own ears. You've heard it. What do we do?" And they said, "He's worthy of death." And that's where we left it last time. Facing these fears, Jesus refused to bow. Now what happens? Let's start reading in the book of Luke, chapter 23, and verse 1. "Then the whole assembly rose and led him off to Pilate." Now, led him. Now, this is a fulfillment of Isaiah 53, verse 7. It says he's led like a lamb to the slaughter, but he opens not his mouth. This is the fulfillment of that. What they are doing is Jesus is still bound. They're leading him down the streets of Jerusalem. Now, it says the whole assembly was doing this. We don't know exactly how many were involved in this, but we knew that the assembly of the Sanhedrin consisted of 70 men. Now, they had to have a quorum, so that was probably at least 50. So 50 to 70 men are leading Jesus down the streets of Jerusalem in this parade. Now, why? Because they're bullies. This is intimidating. In the event that there was some sort of plan to come and attack and free Jesus from them, then 50 or 70 men would surely, detour that. And also, if they wanted to witness for Jesus on Jesus' behalf, who would want to do that? You got these 70 or 50 or 70 men who are real leaders in the city and real leaders in the county. You don't want to go against them. They should know what they're doing. They should have enough evidence. They should be able to do this. So it would deter any witnessing for Jesus and defense for Jesus. But the primary reason and the thing that they did was bully Pilate, bully the governor. I mean, I'm going to show you in the scriptures, but it's not even 6 a.m. yet. And they're going to Pilate. They're going to the governor. And Pilate, he's probably asleep. He has to get up there yelling and hollering for him. He comes out. He looks out there and he's looking at 50 or 70 Jewish leaders. They're representing the nation. Now, this is an intimidating thing. And they're demanding the death of this guy called Jesus. Now, what is he going to do? He knows he's being bullying. I'm going to say it now, and I'll probably say it a time or two more. But see, I really feel like, when you read the scriptures, it appears that Pilate is defending Jesus. I don't know if it was so much that, or Pilate was just hating being bullied. He knew these guys were bullying him, and this all was an act of intimidation. And I think it was more that he's trying to resist these. He didn't like them. They didn't like him. I think it was more than that than his respect for the life of Jesus. But at any rate, this is the background of what's going on here. Now, a little information and history about Pilate helps a lot in understanding what he did. Let me give you just a little history about this guy named Pontius Pilate. To have acquired his position in life, he had to earn it. He was the governor or the prefect of three areas, Idumea, Judea, and Samaria. He was overall, this is a big area, a lot of people. He had to earn that. So he was a good soldier. He had been a forthright soldier, a fervent one. He had earned the, ascended into the ranks. He was a general. He was an educated man. He had some contacts. And so he was formidable in all of these kinds of ways. And so he had earned this position. And his duties were basically of three areas. First of all, his primary duty was to maintain peace. And the first accusation that they're going to bring against Jesus is that one, is that he subverts the nation. He's causing a disruption in the peace of what you're supposed to be watching over, Pilate. And the second thing that Pilate's duty would be to obtain taxes, to receive the taxes. The second accusation they're going to make against Jesus, we'll read it in just a minute, was that particular thing. He teaches not to pay taxes, is what they're going to say about Jesus. We know that's not true, but this is the accusations that they're making. And the third thing that Pilate was responsible to do was watch over the construction that Rome was be doing in the area, any money spent, any construction work. So that was Pilate's basic duties. Now, his tenure, he became the governor or the prefect in about 26 A.D., and he governed until 36 A.D., and I'll tell you what happened right there at the end of our time together today. So he has this tenure of about 10 years. And during these 10 years, he had the sole responsibility of execution. All executions had to come through him. All verdicts, all guilties for execution by crucifixion had to come through him. So they had to go through Pilate. The Jews had been relieved of any ability or any responsibility to execute anyone. It had to go through the Roman government. So this is what he was doing. Now, he had had several near insurrections during his tenure. And these had all gotten back to the emperor, and he was on the emperor's bad list. He was being investigated as this was even going on. Now, one of the things that Pilate did is he brought these standards into the city of Jerusalem and into the temple area as well. And these standards were banners or shields with the emblem of Caesar on it or the Roman Empire emblems on it. And the Jews saw these as idols, and they had a fit. And they asked Pilate to remove them, and he wouldn't. And it came to a showdown. And Pilate finally had to remove them because of the pressure that was being put on him by the emperor. So he had several of these kinds of situations. But the worst one was when Pilate wanted to build an aqueduct. He wanted to bring water into the city of Jerusalem. And so he took money from the Jewish temple to do it. That didn't go well. They rebelled. And several Jews were slaughtered during this time. So now what was happening with the emperor is they were demanding the removal of Pilate. And Pilate knew he was on thin ice. Pilate knew he was being investigated. And if he messed up one more time, he would lose his occupation. But you just didn't lose your occupation with the emperor. You were punished. And he knew that this is where things were with him. Now, he's projected as being this person who was sensitive to Jesus, but he wasn't. He really wasn't. As you read the history about him, Josephus wrote about him, a historian, and Philo wrote about him, another historian. And what Philo said about him was, Philo said, Pilate had vindictiveness and a furious temper. He would get you. He would get mad at you. He would have you killed. This is what he really was. But as vile as Pilate was, when he's compared to these Jews, Pilate's a kitty cat. Pilate's a puppy dog compared to these vile and wicked and mean Jews that were doing this to Jesus and bullying this whole crowd or attempting to. So when Jesus is faced with Jesus in this situation with Jesus, when he has to confront this thing, he's on thin ice. He knows that one more bad uproar was going to cause him his occupation and probably punishment from the emperor. So this is the background of what's happening. As Pilate walks out that morning and he sees 50 or 70 Jewish leaders with this guy, and they're hollering for his crucifixion. Let's read now. Verse 2 through 4. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We have found this man." Now, you may recall that was our Easter title. "This man, subverting our nation." That's the first accusation. He's causing disruption. Pilate, you got to deal with this. Number two, he opposes payment of taxes to Caesar. We know that's not true, but that was what they said. And claims to be Christ the King. He's in contention with the emperor. He's wanting to rebel against the emperor, and he wants to be king. That's the third accusation that they've had against Jesus. So Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the King of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say." didn't back down to the fear of the bullying. Yes, it is as you say, Jesus replied. Now, John and Matthew give us a whole lot more of the dialogue between Pilate and Jesus. And Jesus, he asked him, and of course we know that Jesus says, I am, but it's not a kingdom of this world. My kingdom is not of this world. And he, obviously Pilate understood it. And I'll show you later that I know he understood it. So Pilate, Luke just kind of condenses this down, what Pilate actually says. So Pilate questions him, and he comes out with a verdict that he comes out with. And here's what he says. Jesus replied, then Pilate announced to the chief priest and the crowd, I find no basis for a charge against this man. Now, that seems pretty quick. Here's all these 50 or 70 men out there screaming for, how did he come up with this verdict so quickly? Because he knew about Jesus. Pilate knew about Jesus. That's what Matthew tells us in Matthew 27:18. It says there, for he knew, Pilate knew, it was out of envy that they had handed Jesus over to him. Pilate knew that he wasn't in opposition to paying taxes to Caesar. He probably knew what Jesus had said about it. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's. He knew that Jesus wasn't in opposition to the emperor as far as being king. He said, my kingdom's not of this world. He knew enough about the teachings of Jesus and the things of Jesus and the customs of the Jews to know they were expecting the Messiah. And this is what he's talking about. He's not talking about opposition to Caesar. He knew he wasn't causing an uproar. He knew about his region and his area. Everybody knew about Jesus. He knew Jesus wasn't causing a subversion in the nation. He knew about Jesus. Everybody knew about Jesus. So he knew all these things. So he was able to come back pretty quickly and say, he's not guilty. That's his verdict. Not guilty. That's what I'm saying. But they didn't like that. They didn't go along with that. Now, so what do you do when you're pressured by a bully? When you're pressured by fear? What do you do? How do you handle it? See, here's, I think, one thing that we all do. We deflect. We try to shove it off onto somebody else. It's our responsibility to deal with, but we want to kind of delegate it, you know? And this is exactly what Pilate does now. So let me read to you verses 5 through 7 of Luke. But they insisted. He stirs up the people all over Judea by his teaching. He started in Galilee. Now, Galilee is where Jesus was from. Galilee is where Jesus was raised. Galilee is where Jesus ministered for 2 years. He started it in Galilee. And has come all the way here. On hearing this, Pilate asked if this man was a Galilean, because Galileans had a different governor. So he's going to deflect if he possibly can. He said, when he learned that Jesus was under Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. Isn't that what we kind of do? We know it's our responsibility to deal with this thing, but we want to push it off onto somebody else. Get it off of me. I want this quandary off of me. I want it to somebody else to have to deal with it. Now, this Herod guy, this is Herod Antipas. We've talked about him on several occasions. This is the vilest man in the scriptures, I think. He had a brother named Philip. He had several brothers, but had a brother named Philip. Philip married his niece, his brother's daughter, Philip did, and her name is Herodias. So Herod goes to visit his brother Philip and his wife Herodias, and he falls in love with his brother's wife and takes his brother's wife and marries her, a wife which is also his niece, the daughter of another brother, takes her away from Philip and marries her. And when John the Baptist heard about this, John the Baptist went off the rail. I mean, he's going up and down the Jordan River baptizing people. And so when John the Baptist hears about that, he starts preaching about it. It's his primary subject. And Herodias, who's a mean woman, Herodias and Herod, they want to shut him up. Herodias wants him dead. Herod just wants him to shut up. So he arrests him and puts him in a dungeon. This is where John is at. John is arrested and put into a dungeon. Now, Herod has this big birthday bash. Invites all of his buddies, and it's a drunken party. And Philip and Herodias' daughter, who is now Herod's stepdaughter, is doing this exotic dance, this sensual dance. And Herod gets all messed up. He's drunk. He's messed up. He's watching his stepdaughter, which is also his, I guess, his niece as well, watching her do a dance. And he gets messed up, and he propositions her right there in the party. He says, I'll give you half of my kingdom. And rather than the stepdaughter saying, which is also his name, rather than her saying, you vile, wicked man, she says, let me go ask Mama. So she goes, asks her mother, Herodias, which is also Herod's wife, and says, here's what Herod, your husband, said to me. He propositioned me. And Herodias says this, okay, you can do it, but get the head of John the Baptist on a platter. I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. So she goes back and tells Herod, this Herod that we're talking about here, says, okay, I'll do it, but I want the head of John the Baptist on a platter. Now, that's where that saying comes from, in case you didn't know. Give it to me on a silver platter. That's where it originated. So Herod does it. Herod has John the Baptist beheaded and brings the head into the party on a platter. Now, these are the people that Pilate is sending Jesus to determine his destiny. Now, I got a lot of thoughts going on in my head right now, but see, these are mean, wicked women, Herodias and this stepdaughter. I mean, but hell hath no fury like... and this is what's happening, and this is a vile man. But to me, it's a picture of a bully. How vile bullying with fear is. How cruel it is. How hideous it is. How incestuous kind of it is to make us and force us to do things and cut our heads off, if at all possible, to stop us, put us in a dungeon, chain us up. This is what fear, the bully of fear, wants to do to us. And this is to whom he sent him to. Now, this is where Jesus is now. So let's read now what happens in the presence of Herod. Luke 23, verse 8. Said, when Herod saw Jesus, he was greatly pleased, because for a long time he'd been wanting to see him. Everybody wanted to see Jesus. Everybody knew about Jesus. Pilate knew about Jesus. Herod knew about Jesus. Jesus was the talk of the town. From what he had heard about him, he hoped to see him perform some miracles. And he plied him with many questions. Now, that word plied, it means to accost. To accost with many inquiries. Now, I'm going to bring this out in just a second, but see, this is what fear does to us. Fear accosts us. It comes at us and it badgers us with, what if? What if? What if you fail? What if you die? What if you get sick? What if you make somebody mad? And fear comes at us like that. And so this is what the way Herod is coming with his tactics. He's plied him. The chief priest says, but Jesus gave him no answer. That's our title today. Now, what I want you to see while that's up on the screen is, how does Jesus reply to this accosting? He doesn't. He answers them not a word. Jesus gave him no answer. And the chief priest, the teachers of the law, were standing there vehemently accusing him. And then Herod, they're doing their bully thing. And then Herod and the soldiers ridiculed and mocked him. That's what fear does to us. It mocks us. It ridicules us. Dressing him in an elegant robe, they sent him back to Pilate. You can't get rid of the bully. You can deflect it, but you never get rid of the bully unless you face it. That day, Herod and Pilate became friends before they had been enemies. It tells us a lot about Pilate, that you know somebody by the friends they keep. And if you have a friend like Herod, Herod's your friend. that's not good. That's not good. Now, what I want to say, this is the fifth trial that Jesus has been through. It is not yet 6 a.m. Annas, Caiaphas, the Sanhedrin, Pilate, now Herod. Five trials that they've bullied and pushed and rammed Jesus through to get their will that he be on that cross and dead and buried by sundown that day. Now, they dressed him in this elegant robe. They mocked him and they humiliated him. And this is what bullying always does to it. It accosts us. And what I want us to see is this is exactly what fear does to any of us. What if you make people mad? What if you die? You see, bullying is not just people. It can be an illness. It can be a sickness. It strikes fear in you. Bullying can be a phobia. People have all kinds of phobias, right? They have spider phobias and dog phobias and boogerman phobias. They have all kinds of water phobias. A couple of weeks ago, I smelled something in the media room. And I got looking. I couldn't see anything. And so finally I found this little tiny mouse. He's about that long. Dead in the media room. And this big grown woman, I won't call her that, but this big grown woman, she sees it and she runs like a little girl in high school, grammar school. From this little tiny mouse. I'm thinking, what? But people do. But these phobias usually don't stop you from acquiring your destiny. But fear will. And it could come in any kind of a way upon any of us. What do you do when you face the fear? Now, well, the way Jesus teaches us to do it here is he doesn't even respond to this egotistical maniac. Now, I want you to realize how difficult that would have been. See, the best thing we can do when we're facing the bully of fear is not respond to it, even if it's a person or people. And that may seem like that's a weakness, that, well, you're just weak if you don't stand up for yourself. No, it takes a lot more strength to not respond than it takes to respond. Here's what I want you to see. So we don't realize how difficult this was for Jesus to not respond. See, this is the egotistical maniac who murdered John the Baptist, who was the cousin of Jesus. This guy murdered his cousin, cut his head off. This is the guy who murdered the mentor of Jesus. John the Baptist was a mentor to Jesus. This is the guy who murdered the forerunner of Jesus, John the Baptist. How difficult would it be not to say something? What would you want to say to this guy? What do you imagine Jesus wanted to say? And you see, when we come in contact with the bully of fear, whether it be a person or we want to let it accost us. We want to go back at it. We want to reply to it. We want to respond to it. It's the wrong thing to do. And we learn from Jesus not to do that. Now, what we have learned over our time in ministry and in life is the best thing to do. In fact, the most demeaning thing that you really can do. See, like, if you send somebody a text or you leave them a message and they don't respond to you, how does that make you feel? Does that kind of demean you? Well, aren't I important enough that you could at least send me a text and can at least call me back? It's a perfect way to respond to a bully. You demean the bully by not responding to it. And what I want us to say is when Jesus, all through this entire time, he was constantly being accosted, but he would not respond. He said, are you the Christ? And he says, well, I'm not going to argue with you about that, but I'll just tell you this, that you're going to see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of God, the mighty God, and he's coming in judgment on you. And they knew what that meant. So what I'm trying to relay to you is when we don't attempt to execute vengeance, and we allow God to do it, and we keep our mouths shut, God takes care of it. See, that whole generation was executed vengeance on. God came before that generation passed and annihilated the whole generation for executing Jesus. Jesus didn't argue with it. Now, what happened here then to Herod? What took place here? And I want to give you this historic fact aspect of it. What happened is now, it's about 33 A.D., 3 years in A.D. 36. What happened, to see if I can keep this straight for you. Herod's wife, Herodias, has a brother, and his name's Agrippa. Agrippa is also a governor. He's also Herod's brother-in-law, and his nephew. So it's Uncle Herod to Agrippa, right? Now, they get into this conflict. And what happens is the emperor is a friend of Agrippa's who's in conflict with Herod. And Caligula, the emperor, has Herod exiled because Agrippa gets the emperor to, it's so incestuous, it's so mixed up. But Herod is accused of an insurrection against the emperor, so he has him exiled. He strips him of everything. He and Herodias, they're taken into exile and put off. And in 3 years later, in AD 39, either Agrippa ordered the assassination of Herod or Herod died. But either way, Herod is dead in AD 39. 6 years from now, Herod's dead. Jesus refused to answer him, period. What we've learned over our time is that keep my mouth shut. And many of you have watched me do it. I just don't. It has arrested my life. Yes, it has bound me up. Yes, it is beating me mentally and spiritually and emotionally. Yes, it is assaulting me. Yes, it is insulting me. Yes, it is mocking me. Yes, it's putting garments on me that make me look like something I'm not. Yes. But I have learned. I've got to walk through that. I've got to go through the fear afraid. But I got to keep on going. I have got to carry my cross. I have got to do what I feel God's called me to do if I want God to bless my life. Oh, I could curl up in the floor. There's been many times I wished I could have curled up in the floor and the whole thing gone away. But what you learn to do is you do it afraid. And that's what Jesus did. He would not answer him one word. Now, Jesus is back now to Pilate. Let me go through this the rest of it really, really quickly, as fast as I can. You should be very familiar with these passages that I'm reading. That's what I really wanted to talk about right there. But you should be really familiar with the rest that I'm going to be talking about here. And so I'm going to read through them quickly, and I'm going to pull up just some points that I think that you need to be aware of, and it makes it more insightful for us. And when Matthew's writing about this, he writes this in Matthew 27:19. He says, while Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, and he's trying to figure out what to do with Jesus, his wife, Pilate's wife, sent him this message. Don't have anything to do with that innocent man. That's the part I want to pull from. For I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him. So Pilate's sitting on the judge's seat, and he hears a psst. General Pilate. Psst. General Pilate. What? We have a message for you. From whom? Your wife. Now, if you're a husband, you know how that is. See, your wife feels like she can interrupt you no matter what you're doing. And she can. She can, right? They can. That's the way it should be, right? And so they can. So this is what's happening. And so now his wife is saying, don't mess with this innocent man. And that's on one side of him. And the Jews are on the other side. Pilate can't win. He's not going to win this thing. He's going to lose one way or the other. But the point that I really want to bring out of this thing is this, is that every Gentile who is involved in the judging of Jesus for crucifixion said he's not guilty. He's innocent. Every Gentile. If you ever wonder who was responsible in the natural for Jesus being executed, it wasn't Pilate. It was the Jews. It wasn't the Gentiles. It was the Jews. That's in the natural. But what you've really got to remember is in the background, it's been the plan of God from the foundation of the world. From the very beginning of it, Revelation 13:8 says, the Lamb of God was slain from the foundation of the world. Yeah, we can blame the Jews. We can blame Satan. But really, it was God who did this. All right, now the next passage is going to be pretty long. I'm going to pull out a couple of thoughts for us as we go through it. Reading verses 23:13-25. Pilate called together the chief priest, the rulers, and the people, and said to them, you brought me this man as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I have examined him. I've questioned him in your presence and have found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has Herod, for he sent him back to us. As you can see, he has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him. Wait a minute. If he's done nothing, then why are you going to punish him? What's that about? Because you're bowing to the bully. You're relinquishing to the bully. And this is what happens when we make deals with a bully. That doesn't work out well. I will punish him, then release him. With one voice they cried out, away with this man! Release Barabbas to us. Now, Barabbas is a terrorist. That's who Barabbas is. Barabbas had been thrown into prison for an insurrection in the city and for murder. Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again. But they kept shouting, crucify him, crucify him. And for the third time he spoke to them. Three times, Pilate says, not guilty. He tries to stand up against the bully of fear, but it's not going to work. Why? What crime has this man committed? There are no witnesses. There's nothing to prove his guilt. Why? I have found in him no grounds for the death penalty. Therefore, I will punish him and then release him. But with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that he be crucified. And their shouts prevailed. So Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection, Barabbas, and murder, the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. So Pilate, because of pressure, released a terrorist. But at least he only released one. I won't say any more about that. Now what I want you to see, I don't need to, I can see. But what I want you to see is they didn't just want Jesus punished. They just didn't want Jesus just dead. They wanted Jesus tortured, humiliated by crucifixion. Now, that's what a bully wants. A bully wants you totally humiliated. The bully wants you tortured. That's what fear wants to do to us. That's what they wanted. Reading in Matthew chapter 27, verse 24. When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting. Now, Pilate cannot stand another uproar. An uproar was starting. He took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. Now, what we don't know is that this is actually a Jewish custom. You've heard this. It's actually a Jewish custom. I have you the reference here. It's Deuteronomy 21, 1 through 9. And it's supposed to purge you from guilt. So this is what Pilate's doing. He's doing their custom, something they would identify with. An uproar is starting, so he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. Let's stop there just a second and pause and think about that. Does washing your hands make you innocent? So is Pilate innocent? No. What you got to know is there's always consequences when you bow to the bully. Always. I don't care how many times you wash your hands. I don't care how many times you say, I'm sorry. There are consequences. There are consequences when you succumb to the bully of fear. Reading on. It is your responsibility. That's what Pilate said. All the people answered, let his blood be on us and on our children. And it was. Their children died. Their children and their grandchildren died. That generation did not pass. What a sadful declaration they said. He couldn't stand another uproar. So he's bowing to the bully. And then in John 19:12, starting there, reading on, and we'll finish it up right here. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jews kept shouting, if you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. You're the traitor, Pilate, if you let him go. Anyone who claims to be king opposes Caesar. When Pilate heard this, watch what he does. He brought Jesus out and sat down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. It was the day of preparation of the Passover. What does that mean? I'll tell you in just a second. It was the day of the preparation of Passover week, about the sixth hour. Now, it's just now 6 a.m. They have rammed Jesus through, bullied Jesus through all of these trials, six of them now. Rammed him through, bullied him through in just a few hours. This was their agenda. Roman time is like our times, 12 a.m. to 12 a.m. Jewish time was from sundown to sundown. 6 a.m. in the morning. Here is your king, Pilate said to the Jews. But they shouted, take him away. Take him away. Crucify him. Shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. Now, we've got to realize what he's talking. He's not saying, are we going to crucify this king in comparison to the emperor? See, he knew that the Messiah, that the Jewish customs was they were waiting on their Christ or their king. And many of the people that were standing there had received Jesus and said Jesus was the Christ, was the king. This is what, do you want me to crucify your Christ? Do you want me to crucify your king? Shall I crucify your king? Pilate asked. We have no king but Caesar, the chief priest answered. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified. So the soldiers took charge of Jesus. That's the death squad, took him to be crucified. Now, it said it was the day of preparation of Passover. What does that mean? The day of the Passover, the lambs were slain. At 3 o'clock, they began slaying the lambs. Jesus will die on the cross. 3 p.m., the lambs were slain. At 3 p.m., Jesus will die on the cross as the Lamb of God. It was the day. Yes, it was their agenda to have him crucified, have him dead and buried by sundown. Yes, that was their agenda. But in reality, we've got to always keep this in our head. This was God's agenda. And when I say God, I'm not just talking about Father God. I'm talking about God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. This is what Jesus wanted. Jesus wanted to be crucified. He wanted to be dead. He wanted to be buried by sundown. It was a day of preparation. No matter what we think, this is what God did for you and for me, to redeem us, to save us. This is what Jesus went through. All of this humiliation, going through all of this bullying. But what happened here? Pilate sold his soul for his occupation. Pilate sold his soul to avoid punishment. Pilate sold his soul because of the bullying of the crowd. So I want to ask you, what is it? What bully could cause you to sell your soul? What bully is more important to you than Jesus? And we would all say, none. But I have seen people bullied by their occupation, forget Jesus, and sell their soul for their occupation. I have seen people bullied and sell their soul, and their family become more important than Jesus. Now, I'm not saying family is not important. I'm not saying occupation is not important. But when you get into the big scheme of things, Jesus better be very high on the list. I have seen people bullied, especially in school, bullied by peer pressure. Friends that we have, relationships that we have, bully us. And they become more important than Jesus. The lake becomes more important than Jesus to it. We sell our souls to bullies. What happened to Pilate? Very much like what happened to Herod. AD 36, an insurrection happens. Pilate is called by Caligula, the emperor, to come back to Rome. He's stripped of all of his power, all of his money, all of his possessions, and he's sent into exile. 3 years later, same year of Herod, the emperor either orders the assassination of Herod or gives Pilate, he orders the assassination of Pilate or gives the order that Pilate can commit suicide. Don't know which one happened, just know Pilate's dead in AD 39. There are consequences if you're a bully. There are consequences. God will get you. There are consequences if you bow to a bully. Like Pilate, God will get you. Washing your hands, saying I'm sorry, not fulfilling your call and purpose. There are consequences. What could possibly cost you your soul? What fear is it that you face? And the question is not will you face it. What will you do when you face it is the question. Will it control and dominate you? Or will you control and dominate it? Are you able? Are you capable of doing it afraid and keeping your mouth shut? Can you answer not back a word? If you can, then you're a follower of Jesus Christ. You're taking up your cross daily. And you're going to fulfill your purpose and God's going to bless your life. Let me pray for us. Father.